Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is John Gray, who reads from and discusses his new book, Why Mars and Venus Collide, Improving Relationships by Understanding How Men and Women Cope Differently with Stress, published by HarperCollins. In the weeks to come, we have Eli Gottlieb, Russell Banks, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening, everyone. On behalf of the Tattered Cover, it is my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for supporting independent bookselling. Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus is the number one best-selling relationship of the last decade. Over 30 million Mars and Venus books have been sold in over 40 languages throughout the world. The author of 15 books, Dr. John Gray, returns again to the arena of relationships with his new book, Why Mars and Venus Collide, Improving Relationships by Understanding How Men and Women Cope Differently with Stress. Dr. Gray uses his insight that has helped millions of couples with his unique focus in assisting men and women in understanding, respecting, and appreciating their differences. We are so honored that Dr. John Gray, who has been conducting personal growth seminars for over 30 years and who writes a weekly column entitled Mars Venus Advice that has appeared in over 100 media outlets, and he hosts a weekly internet broadcast that reaches over millions of listeners at marsvenus.com. We're so delighted that he has come to Denver to talk about his new important book. Please welcome Dr. John Gray.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, this is really a fun book, and I'm excited to share with you. This couple right here actually have already purchased the book and already read the book, and they're the first couple I've met who has read the book. So it just came out a couple of weeks ago, so this is very exciting for me. And they gave it a thumbs up. So, definitely a good book. And he said, it feels as though you've been a fly on the wall in our house and you wrote this book especially for us. And, of course, that's what I heard for years and years and years with Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. How many of you have read Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus? Okay, well, thank you so much and for coming again. This book is really a true sequel to that book. I've written several other books about gender differences, but they focused on dating, Mars-Venus on a date, or Mars-Venus together forever, Mars-Venus starting over, Mars-Venus in love, Mars-Venus in the bedroom. Lots of themes of that, but they're all extensions of the basic ideas in Men Are From Mars. And I felt as though I had pretty much done all I wanted to do with that, and I haven't written a book for 6 years. And I thought maybe I would write another book, and I still will, which will be Mars-Venus and the Empty Nest. But I didn't feel like I could write that until I'd been in the empty nest for quite a while. So I have now for 3 years. And for those who are not yet there or in there, there's great, great hope. really, my wife and I are having the best time of our entire lives. So this is really quite wonderful. And yet we're educated in how to make that happen. I see a lot of people having difficulties with that. But this book was inspired by the enormous amount of research which has now been done at the universities on gender differences. When I wrote Men Are From Mars, and when I began teaching Men Are From Mars 10 years before I even wrote that book, developing those ideas, it was completely politically incorrect. And the universities all around the world were trying to prove that men and women were the same. And they weren't releasing any of the information that they were finding on how the differences were there because it sounded politically incorrect. Because we were still in the world thinking that for men and women to have equality, we have to be the same. And now we realize that if everybody has to be the same, you have to give your individuality to be the same. And equality is really learning to respect our individuality. So gradually there's been a shift, to not a full extent, but in the universities now they've got these really cool machines that will measure the brain activity and measure hormonal activities in the body. And they've just discovered so many amazing things that have to do with understanding how men and women's brains are different, how our muscles are different, how our fat is different, how we create energy differently, how our hormones are differently, how we relax differently, and most importantly, how we cope with stress differently. And there's all this data, but not everybody makes sense of it. They just report the data. And it's sort of handed into my lap to be able to interpret this data in ways that make sense to us and can be useful for us for understanding each other better in our relationships. For me, it was like a Christmas present every week, because here was hardcore research verifying every idea that I'd written in Men Are From Mars. And then I went through the process of learning to translate that and developed a whole bunch of new ideas and new concepts in terms of how men and women are different and how we tend to misinterpret each other, how we misunderstand each other. And with this insight, we can better embrace our differences and work together. That becomes a foundation for a new book, just to do that. But then there's another layer put on this book, Why Mars and Venus Collide, which is today, although our brains and our bodies are really not different from 15 years ago, or even 1,000 years ago. It takes a long time for the whole thing to change inside and adapt. The world has dramatically changed. Never in history has there been so much stress put upon people. And, you know, sometimes people say to me, oh yeah, but people were in wars and so forth. I say, no, you don't understand. If you measure the body of people today, there's more stress in our bodies, not so much on men, although men's stress levels are higher, but on women. Now, even in academic circles, they've been doing happiness tests on men and women for many years. So over the last, say, 30 years or so, they've been doing tests to see who's happier. And up to about 6 or 7 years ago, guess who was the happiest? Women. Women have always been happier. However, in the last 6 or 7 years, women now are less happy than men. So some major shift has taken place. Now, I can think back I've been married now 23 years. And I remember there were these little arguments my wife and I would have. Sometimes I would be really exhausted and tired and come home and wanting to go to bed. And she'd be nudging me and saying, well, John, the trash has to go out. Trash has to go out. And I go, I'm so tired, you know, my work is so exhausting, and kind of implying, well, maybe you could do it. And she would go into great detail about how exhausting her day was. And literally, from my perspective, it was like, you don't do nearly as much as me. And this is often what men think. Now, they don't always say it, but they think it. Because as soon as I said it, she then had to explain to me in great detail for an hour why she does more than me. So I would never have that conversation again. And I learned never to try to compete with a woman in terms of who is most unhappy or who suffers the most or who does the most. Women win it all. And I now have the evidence and proof that this wonderful research came out to reveal this, which is that there is a hormone, which is probably the most researched hormone in the world. At all universities for the last 50 years, this hormone has been researched massively, and it's called cortisol. The adrenal gland, when we're under stress, puts out cortisol. And literally every single modern sickness and disease we have today can be directly linked to chronic levels of cortisol, affecting different people differently according to our body types and our genes. But the primary cause, again and again, comes back to this elevated cortisol. In brief, what happens when your body is in cortisol mode? That's the stress mode. And a theme of this talk is how men and women cope with stress differently. And right now I'm laying an argument which is the foundation of why we have to cope effectively with stress, or we're not going to experience the conjugal bliss that we all are destined to enjoy. Just popped in my mind to say it that way. But I have to say, I've been married to my wife 23 years, and I have lots of friends who've stopped having sex. It's quite common that couples after 10 or 15 years occasionally have sex, and it's not that spectacular. I live this book, Why Mars and Venus Collide. I understand these principles. They're very easy. It makes relationships easier than before if both people are cooperating. And I'm proud to say, as one Australian show I did today said, so you come on Mars show to brag about sex. I went, yes, that's what we do on Mars. We brag. And but, you know, this is so many years in a marriage, and we've seen the worst of each other and the best of each other. We've gone through those ups and downs and children and sicknesses and deaths and upsets and thinking about divorce at times and gone to therapists. I mean, it's a whole 27 years we've been on, you know, been with each other. So 23 years married. And here we are in these golden years of our life, feeling healthier and more energy than we've ever felt. And I'm proud to announce that the myth that sex goes away is wrong, because I just had the best sex in my entire life yesterday with my wife. So it was just, it was 2 days ago, but it seems like just yesterday. And it really is possible, and I'm going to explain why that's possible and why that is really a necessity today, because romance and sex, I have to say those things together, sex to men, romance to women, but romance and sex are the most powerful ways to lower stress in your body. You can measure it. After sex, your stress levels dive down. If there's romance and there's sex. If a man just has sex, his stress levels don't go down. And if a woman just has sex, her stress levels don't go down. It needs to be romance and sex together, and your stress levels dramatically drop. But here's another little thought about, and then you might think I'm saying, well, then all you have to do is have sex and romance. And I say it's not so easy. There's a lot of prerequisites to having that. And one of the basic symptoms of being stressed in our body is our energy levels start dropping. You know, couples often say to me, well, we just don't have time for sex. And I say, I'll let the subject change, and then I'll let it move on. And I say, and what TV shows do you like? And they'll mention some of the shows they like to watch. And at least they're watching 3 shows a week. And I say, you know, instead of watching those 3 shows a week, you got to have sex 3 times. You have plenty of time to do it. It's you don't have the energy to do it. We don't have the inclination to do it. It's just not happening. In the beginning of a relationship, it just happens. And we have to remember that in our Western world, where everything has changed, and I'm about to talk about that change, which is causing so much stress, romance has become this huge, important thing. 100 years ago, women didn't care about romance. Women didn't care about men talking to them. And women didn't care about men doing domestic chores. Women did their whole world separately from men, and they sort of connected together occasionally. And I see evidence of that, because I didn't live 100 years ago, but I've traveled around the world 28 times or something like that and more. And I look at indigenous cultures, places where they don't have TV. That's what I call an indigenous culture. I was just down in Ecuador, for example, and I took a private plane in from the airport into the Amazon, unloaded on a dirt airstrip. Got in a canoe, canoed for 2.5 hours or 2 hours. Story gets a little bigger every time I tell it. But hiked through the jungle for 6.5 hours. And that is true. I could have done it in 5, but it was my wife. It was one of the highlights of our marriage, to be quite honest. About 4/5 of the way through, we were climbing over this river on a log, and I had to be behind her, guiding her, holding her, and so forth. And at the end, she says, I'm so glad you're here, John. If you weren't here, I would just crawl into a puddle and cry. For the next 2.5 hours, I was literally like flying through the jungle, because that gave me so much energy, because men love to be the hero. And we'll learn about this, which is that when men feel that they actually have a place in this world and they make a difference, it stimulates a magic hormone for men. And we'll learn what that hormone is that actually lowers stress. Well, I'll say it now. That hormone's testosterone. In a man's body, testosterone is the hormone that lowers stress. However, testosterone doesn't lower stress for women. And this is the unfortunate reality of today, although there is a solution. But the unfortunate reality today is that as women have gained more independence and they're more financially independent, they earn a living, they go out and have their jobs, they love their careers, they love the opportunity for it, they have so many choices and so forth. One of the problems is that when you're in the traditional work world that women go out into, you're in more of an emergency situation. And in that emergency situation where there's basically everything, there's deadlines and there's you do things for payment rather than because it's nurturing and unconditional and love, what happens is it stimulates testosterone. And it's literally like a jungle. And if you go to the indigenous tribe I was just at, it was quite cute. They had very simple rules. Only men are allowed in the jungle, and only women are allowed in the garden. Men make the garden, and then they're not allowed in. And the garden is actually a place which is very nurturing. And what we find, and what researchers did about 6 years ago at UCLA, they discovered that there's this hormone, this nurturing, cuddling, friendship, love hormone, and it's called oxytocin. And oxytocin is necessary in a woman's body to lower her stress levels. And if she doesn't have enough oxytocin, her stress levels will continue to rise, and then she will have low levels of energy. She will feel exhaustion. She'll feel tired. She'll feel overwhelmed. One of the ways women react to stress is to feel a greater pressure to do more. One of the ways men react to stress is to feel a greater pressure to do nothing. So when I'm on a stressful day, I come home and I see a couch. That's all I see. I don't see a mess. I don't see dishes that have to be done. I don't see clothes that have to be washed. I don't see a computer that has to be fixed. I don't see a leak in the roof that I have to do. I see a couch. because under stress, that's what men respond to. And it will actually, sitting on a couch, will help him to rebuild his testosterone levels. And when they go up, his energy levels go up, his stress levels go down. Women see the house. They see domestic nurturing activities that need to be done. And that would stimulate oxytocin to lower her stress levels. Unfortunately, and that's how she's wired up, nurturing activities help her to cope with stress. So she comes home. She doesn't see a couch. Matter of fact, she sees the couch, but she can't sit on it if she tried. Literally, if you tried to sit down, your brain would say, but you must do this, you must do this, you must do this. All these things you have to do. I call it the never-ending to-do list that women carry around in their heads. By the way, can any women relate to a never-ending to-do list? You know that list. It keeps you busy. Now, I have a big list during the workday, but at sunset, it seems to disappear. If I see a couch, it's gone, because that's how men cope with stress, is their body has to rebuild testosterone through rest and recreation. We are designed to be this way. Women are designed to cope with stress through being in nurturing activities. So cooking, cleaning, it sounds so old-fashioned to say this, caring for children, being a good friend, making cookies for the neighbors, helping people in a nurturing environment, all stimulates oxytocin for women. But today it doesn't. That's the problem. It's a double problem. One is women are spending 8 hours of the day making testosterone instead of oxytocin. So then the solution to that is balance. If you don't have a lot of time producing testosterone, then the time that you have at home, which is the major source of oxytocin, make sure you're making use of that time to balance out the testosterone. Otherwise, your stress levels will be too high. And that is the reality today. When men come home, their stress levels begin to drop. Just the anticipation of the TV set or watching the news or a nice couch or a nice hobby, whatever, his stress levels will start to drop. And as a side note, they've even done research to prove this, which is a man sitting in front of a TV set. Over a short period of time, his testosterone levels will begin to rise, particularly a football game. If you don't have a good stimulating competitive football game to stimulate testosterone, you can have a remote control and just change the channels quite rapidly. That will also change, stimulates that. But one other thing that will bump the testosterone levels is get a bigger screen. The bigger the screen, the more testosterone, and it's proven. So this is amazing, but this is why you get this obsession with guys with bigger screens. You know, there's when the big screens came out, I used to go to the electronics store and just sit, because they got these couches and big screens, and just observe all the arguments that couples would get into. Because she's saying, where are we going to put it? How's it going to fit into the room? He's going, who cares? We'll just have it there. Anyway, so women have a double whammy that they're having to solve. And I'm not in any way suggesting we go back to the indigenous tribes where the men go to the jungle and the women stay in the garden. That's the old world we came from. Just we can learn from that. They're not stressed out people. What we can see is that one is women don't have enough time in the environment of oxytocin to lower their stress levels. Two is that when they do have their time in that environment to lower their stress levels, it's no longer oxytocin producing because there's an urgency. When anything has urgency attached to it, it stimulates testosterone. Men thrive in a world of urgency. It may not seem that way. Often my family sees me sitting very patiently, calmly, happily on the couch, waiting to the last minute to do anything. But see, this is a very typical male response. We wait to the last minute to do things. What does that mean? I'm waiting to the last minute to where if I waited any longer, it would be a disaster. And therefore, it's an emergency that I get up and go. And that, you know, to various degrees with various men, but to an extreme degree with me, so I began to relate to that and try to understand that. But I realized I wasn't alone, because I would notice that on the last shopping day before Christmas, I, like millions of other men, will go shopping. And we will wait to the last minute just in case they call it off. Who knows? Maybe we won't have to do it. The Valentine's Day, the last day, men come pouring in to get those Valentine's cards. They're hoping to make that reservation in time, that they're not all taken, because they will tend to wait to the last minute. Men get energy from emergencies. And this is proven. Whenever, if there was a fire that went off, men's testosterone levels would shoot up and their stress levels would go down. When I'm stressed, often what I used to do, I don't anymore because I'm not stressed like that. But what I used to do is I would just get in my fast car and drive fast on the highway. And going at that high speed, which would normally cause stress to my wife, relaxes me. As long as I have confidence that I can solve the problem. So if there's a fire and I'm a fireman and I know how to handle it, I wake up and I go, okay, I got a job to do. If there's a fire and I don't know how to handle it, then my testosterone levels may not rise and the stress would rise. So what men need is confidence. What women need is assurance that they will get the help they need, that they have the time they need, that they have the resources they need. And that's why routine behaviors are particularly helpful for producing oxytocin. No emergencies, no big sudden changes in the routine. So men and women become this perfect complement when you understand this. Just in theory for a moment, we'll see how this works in practice. If you've got routines in the house, the woman is in charge of routines. And she regulates her life so she has plenty of time to do the routines she loves to do. They're oxytocin stimulating, they're nurturing behaviors. Then suddenly, when there's an emergency, and there will always be emergencies, you've got this guy sitting on the couch, ready to rise for any emergency that ever occurs. And that's what my role is in the house. I have three roles. One is I'm the romantic man. Two is I'm the therapist. I'm the good communicator. And three is I'm emergency man. As emergency man, I'm sitting on the couch always until the emergency. Because I need to sit on the couch in order to rebuild my testosterone levels. However, and this is, you'll see with men, you see in a shopping mall, this isn't just me, you look at a shopping mall, a man and woman shopping, men have this little peripheral vision thing going on. They're not seeing things, they're looking for couches and chairs. And as soon as their wife plants herself in a store with a chair, he's got magnets that pull him to that chair. You'll see men just sitting there, oh, relief from this long journey. And why is it a long journey? It's not that long, it's just that he doesn't know what we're doing, where we're going, or what we're accomplishing. Those are all testosterone-stimulating activities. Men have to have a point. They have to know where they're going. A beginning, an end, and a chance to take a nap. This is all in our awareness, and it will stimulate testosterone. So meanwhile, we have women in this world of oxytocin. In the world that my mother grew up in, I watched a woman who was capable of raising seven children, six boys, in such a graceful way. It was amazing. She had the good fortune of having resources. She had an inheritance, not a huge one, but a backup support whenever their finances were in difficulty. She had a husband who worked very hard to provide. She lived in a neighborhood where all the mothers had children. She could just simply say to her children, go and play, and they would go and play. And she was there for, you know, what she needed to do. She also had a helper to help cook and clean around the house. So with that help, she had the help she needed. Basically, there weren't that many emergencies, except the kind you would expect with six boys. But she handled those very well. The rhythm of her life was such that she could maintain a stress-free life. And when she did maintain a stress-free life, she experienced unending energy. So I've witnessed this, a woman who has unending energy, and I'm seeing it now in my wife as well. Unending energy means you don't get tired. And I look at, well, how did that happen? Well, when you start looking at the science of a woman's body or a man's body, when we're under stress, we run out of energy. Now, when men aren't under stress, men still run out of energy. Okay, that's the way men are. Where we get our energy is from testosterone, and stress breaks down our muscle mass, and then we have to rebuild our testosterone levels to rebuild our muscles. So anybody knows if you go to the gym and you use your muscles, to rebuild your muscles you need testosterone, and every gym guy knows to rebuild your testosterone, what do? You sleep. They go and they rest, and while they're resting, their body makes more testosterone to rebuild. Resting does that. Resting doesn't increase oxytocin levels. And what is it that women need to keep stress down? It's oxytocin. We're going to learn all about new ways to create oxytocin because women's lifestyle today doesn't give them time to do it. And there are other ways to do it. There is a solution here. So when a woman's body is not stressed, that means the adrenal gland is not pumping cortisol, the body doesn't think you're being chased by a bear, then your body does something miraculous. It burns fat very effortlessly for energy. When your body is under stress, your body can't burn fat for energy. Now, fat gives you 2 to 20 times more energy. Even twice as much energy as carbohydrate is twice as much energy. But when you're under stress, your body craves carbohydrates because that's the only kind of energy your body can produce. Now, has anybody ever felt stressful and suddenly you wanted something sweet or carbohydrate? Can you raise your hand about that? That's the stress response. Anytime you're craving sweets, anytime you're craving carbohydrates, cookies, chocolates, soft drinks, juices, bread, toast, any of those things, that means you're under stress. The body can no longer access fat as a source of energy, and so it begs for carbohydrate. Carbohydrate is what the body chooses to use for energy when you're under stress because it's quick energy. It doesn't last long, but it's quick. So if a bear's chasing you, you just want to quickly get out of there. Because if you don't quickly get out of there, you're going to die anyway. So the body just thinks short term there. So you go into this emergency mode. Not only do you are you unable to create the energy that fat burning would give you. And why is that relevant to women? Because women's brains don't shut off at the end of the day. They stay busy always. Men's do. They just shut down. We can just watch TV and think about nothing. And this is hard for women to even comprehend. Because a woman will try to sit down and watch TV, but she's thinking, but I still have to do this, and I still have to do this, and I still have to do this, and what am I going to do about that? Can any women relate to that? Just to see you're not alone. This is a phenomenon I've seen in women. As a therapist, listening to women for over 30 years, I'm just wondering, looking at them, like, why can't they just turn it off? They can't. And now we have all the new research to show why they can't turn it off. For example, there's different centers in the brain. This is chapter 2, Hardwired to be Different. We just covered chapter 1, Why Mars and Venus Collide, or Under More Stress. Chapter 2 is one of the ways we're hardwired to be different. And there's like about 12 different ways I point out there. Here's one of them, which is there's different activity centers. So they can see these brain scans, and they see that when you're analyzing something, a part of your brain, there's blood flows to there. And when you're listening, part of your brain flows to over here, up in the front left part of the brain. And when you're talking, next to the listening center, there's a talking center. Blood flows to there. And if you're in your intuitive self, but over on your right side of your brain, creative self, blood's going to flow over there. If you're planning your future, some blood's flowing over in the right side of your brain. If you're prioritizing what's important, blood's flowing towards the front of your brain. If you're having emotional memories of everything that's ever gone bad in your life, then it's right towards the middle of the brain. So these are all different intelligence centers in the brain. Now, one of the big differences, and it's pretty much the same for men and women, all of those centers tend to be a little bigger. Some of them, not all of them, but some of them tend to be a little bigger in men. Some tend to be bigger in women. Particularly the one that's bigger in women is what's called the hippocampus, which is the emotional memory. Women store twice as many memories of everything that's gone wrong than men. That's just to help you a minute. Those times when she's like pointing out that you never do this and you always do that and whatever. Literally, she has this huge memory bank opening up to everything you've ever done or not done. And particularly when she's under stress, and this is more research that shows this, in this chapter, under moderate stress, women experience 8 times more blood flow to the emotional part of the brain to activate the emotional memory. So really, we can conclude that basically that's why women have this, what I would call temporary amnesia, where at times of stress, they will forget any good thing you've ever done and remember every bad thing you've ever done. And men are going, how can she remember this stuff? Well, is that your brain is designed to do it. And that being one of the differences between men and women's brains, the first one I'm still getting to, which is these different intelligence centers in the brain we call gray matter. And men actually have 7 times more gray matter in their brains. But the difference is that when women use their brains, they have 10 times more white matter. White matter is what connects all the gray matter. So think of the gray matter as these little computers, and when men's using one computer, all the rest of them rest. Men use one part of the brain at a time. They're in sequence when they're using the brain. Women, if one part of the brain gets active, it calls up all the other parts of the brain, and they have a conference call. Everybody has an opinion, and it all comes into the discussion. And this is not the way men's brains are. Men's brains are sequential. They use this or they use this. And one of the big challenges in a relationship is communication. Because when a woman is using, when a woman's analyzing, there's actually a part of the analyzing part of her brain that's also has an ear on it, basically, can hear from that spot. Men have only 1 spot in their brain they can hear from. Women have 7 spots in the brain they can hear from. Now that means, practically speaking, if a man gets a stroke in the left front of his brain, he'll never listen again. If a woman has a stroke in that same place, she's got 6 other ears left in her brain. Now, practically speaking, what this means is that when we're listening to someone talk, men are constantly moving between listening and thinking, coming back and listening and thinking. And we're good at that. We've got pretty much good roads going back between listen, think, listen, think, listen, think. Women, however, don't just talk about ideas. They bring feelings into the discussion because they have ideas, they're listening, they're talking, the feelings are coming forth. So every time feelings come up, men have to go across the Grand Canyon to the other side of their brain, and there's no roads. It's like no highways. It's like we have to take this big leap over there. And once we get over the feeling part of the brain, we're completely disconnected from the thinking part of the brain. We don't know what we're feeling. We're feeling, but we don't know what we're feeling. We have to go back to the thinking part of the brain, figure out what we were feeling, then analyze, what do I do with this knowledge now? And then he has to go to the future part of the brain and say, well, what if I brought this thought up into the conversation? Then he goes to the emotional memory and goes, oh, that would be a disaster. This conversation would go on for 20 minutes longer. He comes back to the thinking part of the brain to figure out, okay, what am I going to do about this? He says, well, I don't know, and goes back to listen to what you're saying. Meanwhile, you've changed the subject. And he's wondering, he's sort of lost in this conversation. But really what goes on inside of men's brains is we listen and then we stop listening and we start preparing what our response is. Matter of fact, whenever women start talking about problems, we will start thinking, how am I going to solve them? And then what men do in terms of our way of solving problems in our mind, when I've got 15 problems, the way I solve them as a man, and this is the way our brains are designed. We have the stress center in our brain, the amygdala, is twice as big in men as it is in women. And in men, the wiring goes from the amygdala to the action part of the brain. So when a man is under stress, he has to do something about it. But men have evolved an amygdala that's twice as big as women and only responds to big stresses. So it has to be a big thing for blood to flow from his amygdala to the action part of the brain. A woman's amygdala is half the size of a man's and responds to little problems. Literally, it responds 8 times more than a man's under moderate stress. So when her amygdala recognizes problems, it, instead of being activated directly linked to the action part of the brain, it's linked to the emotional part of the brain. And she experiences 8 times more blood flow in the emotional part of the brain when she's under stress. The emotional part of the brain for a woman is then connected to the talking part of the brain. When she has these strong emotions, if she talks and somebody listens, then what occurs is the blood flow decreases to the emotional part of the brain. So it's like alarm bells go off. If she can tell somebody about it, then the alarms go off and we realize everything's okay. And there's actually a brain chemical gets produced in that process, which is called serotonin. Serotonin is a brain chemical that says everything's okay, not to worry, you don't have to do it all today. There's help, you can ask for help, you can get support, it's going to be okay. As my daughter said to my wife one time, and she was like stressing out about a bunch of things. I would never say this, but my daughter said it. She said, Mom, we're not going to die. And she stopped and went, you're right. But she was literally reacting as if we're all going to die if this doesn't get done. And but there's this urgency that happens for women when the serotonin levels begin to drop. Well, you think, well, why don't men have this? Well, first of all, men don't have the connections to the emotional centers that women have. Two, men are also designed to store 50% more serotonin. Men are designed to make serotonin 50% more efficiently than women. And under stress, moderate stress, women use up their serotonin supplies 8 times faster than men. So what we're going to have here is a woman in the modern world, if she's exposed to urgency, testosterone-producing activities, she's going to start running out of serotonin very quickly. The drug industry, of course, has responded to this with a variety of serotonin-type drugs. And I will make a note of this. While sometimes they are effective in helping women, they're not good for your health. They all have negative side effects. And one of the side effects that every single person who takes an antidepressant has, man or woman, as soon as you take it, your cortisol levels double. So once again, it's not good for you. Often women notice a lot of weight gain because when your cortisol levels are high, you can't burn fat for energy. You also start feeling tired, the same thing women feel when they're under stress. Why? Because when you're under stress, you can't burn fat for energy. Cortisol inhibits fat burning. Cortisol also inhibits digestion. Cortisol also inhibits your immune system. All those things start shutting down as your body goes into this emergency mode. So what do we do about that? It's pretty depressing. There's great solutions for it. This is an amazing thing that we're going to get to here, but I just have to paint the picture to create a context of why these little things I'm going to recommend are so important. Because they are so significant, yet if I start out my talk with the answer, you think, well, that's nothing. So one of the answers is to learn, how do we increase oxytocin levels in women? Oh, by the way, let me finish one point. So why did men adapt anyway, and why do men have so much serotonin? Well, think about a guy, for their jobs were usually the dangerous jobs, still are to a great extent. Women are now competing for them, but for thousands of years, men were in the jungle. And when you're in the jungle, your life's in danger. And so men have to have plenty of serotonin backing up the situation to remind them that everything's going to be okay. Even if you die, there will be a parade. Just keep those guys going. Otherwise, they're going to go, wait a second, I'm not going to be in the jungle, I'm going home. So we've adapted with lots of serotonin. Women haven't. They've always been in the security. Women have always been protected. Men were the protectors. Women's brains are designed to be in security, safety, nurturing, domestic situations. And it almost sounds like I'm saying right now that women should be barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. Now, ironically, I was just in Ecuador and all the women were pregnant. They were amazing. All the pregnant women all over the place, and they were in the kitchen. They're these big huts, and the front part of the hut are the meeting areas, and the men hang out there, and the women hang out behind that in their area. Now, the truth is, if you go back there and you say, well, women, do you want to hang out in the front? They go, no, we're busy making food. We like doing this. We like handling the things we do. But that's not our world. But just to understand, that's the world, our world we came from. And then we can start making sense of why we are under so much stress today and why research shows that when women come home from work, their cortisol, just going into the house, their cortisol levels double. Double. This is a huge burden that women are under. And so what I've spent is the last 25 years unknowingly discovering the answer for this problem. Women really told it to me, but I had to translate it in a way that would work for men. And what it is you just listen to what women's complaints are. As a therapist, what you'll hear is basically there's three categories of complaints. The first is there's no romance. The second is he doesn't listen. And the third is he doesn't help out. Can any women relate to a little bit of that in your past experience with men? We'll see, only one or two? You're such a lucky woman. Oh, three or four? Oh, a few more? Okay, right. Right. Usually it's the men who don't raise their hands when I ask questions, because if a man ever raises his hand, his wife's going to look at him and say, well, what did you mean by that? And there'll be a 20-minute discussion. So men tend to want to minimize those. Not that we don't have interest in them, it's just they don't always end up right, and they can be very exhausting for men. Remember, when a man listens to a woman talk, he's got to jog around his brain over and over and over. But more importantly is that when men hear problems, men have to solve problems, otherwise their testosterone levels drop. So as a man, if there's a problem and I feel confident I can solve that problem, my testosterone levels go up. I'm a man, and if there's problems and I can't do anything about that problem, that means I have no confidence to do anything about it, then my testosterone levels drop. So that then causes stress for me. So what happens to a man at the end of a workday? I've got all these problems I'm trying to solve, and now at the end of the workday, there's nothing I can do to solve them. So how do I then solve them? Well, we men have a formula for this, which is there's nothing I can do about it today, then forget it until I can do something about it. And so that's our basic way of doing it, is just forgetting temporarily problems that we can't solve. Hence, we make this huge mistake when a woman's talking about problems. We often say, just forget it. Don't worry about it. Let it go. Why are you talking about it? Why are you making a big deal out of it? And her point of view is, well, if there's nothing we can do about it, at least we can talk about it. And she is designed, by talking about problems, will actually stimulate the hormone that will lower stress for her. And somebody told me there was a study, I really haven't read this study, but somebody told me this study, and it certainly fits with my experience, that when women are talking about problems, 70% of those problems have no solutions. So it's literally like ultimate depression for men to listen to women for too long. And she will bring them up. Not, you know, she can just talk about, oh, the weather, the slush, it's terrible. The traffic jam was awful today. It was so cold. Well, can't we get some sunshine? We did have sunshine, but it doesn't last long. And then she'll say good things. Well, at least we're getting enough water and whatever. But in that mix of everything that's going on in her life, men will hear it as problems. He wants to solve the problems to make her happy. And she doesn't need you to solve the problems to make her happy. She just needs you to hear her. just to hear her. No fancy empathy, no fancy communication skills, reflecting back. You know, I've gone through that whole thing. I know all the guys that did it. I developed all that stuff 35 years ago. You know, we teach men how to listen to women and reflect back what women said. It never works. It works in the therapy office. It works in the seminar. Then you come home, and he reflects back, and she says, no, that's not what I meant. So it just becomes another situation. It doesn't work. So women end up not talking to their husbands about what's going on in their day. And then they end up feeling overwhelmed, feeling this huge pressure to do everything. And that's what women are experiencing today. Now, let me also say that if a man comes home and instead of just relaxing in his couch and doing some little activity, he ends up drinking a lot of beer, okay, then he also is not coping well with stress. So that's some men. Some men are just, or let's say he turns on the TV set and he never turns it off. He's not coping well with stress. So that would be the equivalent of the woman today who comes home and her stress levels double and she feels like she has to do everything. So I won't imply that men are just doing fantastic here. It's just men are doing a lot better in terms of stress and happiness than women are. But ultimately it comes down to this one basic premise. If the woman in the house is happy, everyone is happy. This is the reality. And so in my book, The Edge, there's a clear aim, there's a goal in this book. This book is not about, and this method of solving this problem is helping women to realize, stop trying to make men happy. Don't waste your energy making him happy. Because whatever you do to make him happy is just going to overwhelm you even more. And you're going to be more unhappy, and that's going to make him more unhappy. Men would rather you do nothing for him and just be happy that he's there. That's the key. So it takes a while to get this idea. It readjusts. If you want to help a man, help yourself first. If you want the man in your life to love you more and be more fulfilled, take time to make yourself happy as one aspect of it. But that would be a way limited philosophy. The second, which is most important part of that, as you're taking time to make yourself happy, use him to make you happy. Use him. Men like to be tools. We have no problem saying, yeah, she uses me every night. If it could be that simple. But she needs other things from us, and men aren't even aware of that. Women don't even know what they need after I've listened to them for all these years. What they think often when they finally come to me, they complain. Not enough romance. Not enough communication. And not enough help around the house. Why doesn't he just join in? And there's that frustration. And then often they say, well, how do I get him to join in? I say, before you even attempt to get him to join in, bring back the romance. When you bring back the romance, suddenly the man comes out of his cave. See, romance for a man means sex for a man. Okay, when women have romance, men have sex. And when men are experiencing fulfilling sexual romance with their partners on a regular basis, that man has got 10 times more energy. Then, now he's got 10 times more energy, then the next thing you do is you improve communication. And you learn how to communicate your world to him. Give up trying to hear about his world. Don't worry about getting him to talk. That's a whole huge problem. You don't even understand. If you get him to talk, you'll be so sick of hearing what he has to say. Lots of guys are real quiet for a reason. If you open up and start sharing all the problems in your life, women go, I didn't realize he had so many problems. I'm just not turned on to him anymore. I feel like I have to worry about him all the time. I can't tell him anything I've got. Or they become real sensitive. I can train a man in 2 months to become all sensitive, teach him what hurts and how to communicate. That hurts when you do this. That hurts when you do that. Then the women come back to me and say, you know, everything I do hurts him. I feel like I have to take care of a child here. Women say they want these men in touch with their feelings and open and sharing about their day. I can't wait to have it. Once they get it, they don't want it. Over and over. I've been, this is 15 years ago I learned this. So what is it that women really want? When they're wanting a man to open up and be in touch with his feelings, what they're really wanting is to have a safe place for them to open up and share their feelings. Because if he was, quote, sensitive, then she'd feel safe that he would understand her sensitivities. The reality is without opening a man up, you can teach men very easily how to be good listeners, how to be respectful of what comes out of a woman's mouth. How to be considerate of her feelings. That's what men need to learn. They don't need to learn how to become women. We need to learn how to become the new man that knows how to help save the day for the women who are under massive distress. The irony is, the more financially independent, successful a woman is, the more she thinks she doesn't need a man. Matter of fact, I talk to women and they go, if I say, do you need a man? They say, well, I don't have a man in my life. I say, first thing I say, do you need a man? And it's like I said a bad word. No, I don't need a man. I'd like to have a man. It'd be fun to have a man. I don't need a man. Because they equate need with weakness. That's what makes women attractive to men. I'm going to come home tomorrow or, you know, in a few days after this tour. Always my wife will greet me with a big smile. It didn't used to be this way. And she's going to say, would you fix the computer? She's so happy that Mr. Fix-It's arrived. There's always some emergency that I will tend to. She knows that I'm her backup system. I'm Mr. Emergency. Whenever I'm on that couch, if she's tired and doesn't want to make dinner, without any resistance from me, she can say, John, I'm so exhausted today. Would you make dinner? Yep, emergency man to the rescue. We'll solve the problem. And of course, I just go out and buy the food. And I get credit for cooking it. That's the rules. If I get the food on the table, that's it. If she's tired, she says, oh, I don't want to clean up. No problem, I'll clean up. All you have to do is ask. And that's the big hurdle for women to understand. But she can ask me anything, and I've got the energy to do it now. But if I wasn't having regular sex and romance, I wouldn't have the energy. And if I didn't understand the crisis she's going through every day, I wouldn't have the energy either. See, men get energy from crisis. When there's a fire, when there's a hurricane, when there's a blizzard, suddenly men have all this energy. Like I was just in the Chicago blizzard, and everybody, oh, I got the whole Harper Collins publisher, and they're, oh, it must be exhausting for you. You're at the airport and all this stuff. And I'm like going, I said, yeah, it's kind of hard, but I can handle it. Truth is, I'm having the time of my life. You know, I'm just like Mr. Blizzard Man, and it's not that, it's just like, I can handle this. There's a big urgency thing. How I was going to get to Toronto, and I said, well, I'll just have to fly to Detroit and get a car from Detroit from Chicago and drive to Toronto through the night. My wife goes, oh, just the thought of that's exhausting. But see, men don't even think about that. They just think, I solved the problem. So I'm trying to solve the problem. I'm solving the problem. I'm confident I can do it. So I have no stress from all that. As long as I am experienced and I'm confident and I know what I can do and I can do it, then there's no stress. Whereas for women, she can be experienced, confident, but if it's an emergency, massive stress. If she feels she has a team supporting her, if she feels she has someone she can talk about it with, all those things will balance that stress and lower the stress for her. So the three basic solutions in this order are create romance, then improve communication, then start looking at asking for more around the house, and you will get it with a happy guy, happy to supply a solution. And so it looks like this. How do you increase romance? Men don't even have a clue what is romance. Women say it all the time. I've got couples in my office, and she says, we're never romantic anymore. And I say to the guy, do you know what she means? I don't even have a clue. Men just don't get it. You mean you want me to bring the flowers? This is all about I'm not bringing you flowers? What's the big deal? I give you plenty of money. You can go buy your own flowers if you want flowers. Who cares? And that's why I have to teach him, she cares. If you buy her flowers, it's romance. If she buys herself flowers, it's a little oxytocin, but it's not romance. And women don't just want beautiful flowers. You could get her silk flowers and never have to do it again. I tried that one. No, they want real flowers that would die in a week. Why? So you have to get more. Do they want a potted plant? That's not romantic. That's a nice gift, a little oxytocin. But a cut flower, that's big oxytocin because it's going to die. And then you're going to have to bring it again. So that's the whole idea of men do it again and again and again. That's what women need. Part of romance is reassurance that you still love them. And men go, what do you mean? We're married. What's the big deal? What do you need all this reassurance for? Why do I have to remind you that I love you? I'm married to you. I don't wake up and say, hey, honey, remember me? I'm John Gray. You remember my name. Why can't you remember I love you? Well, what if a woman said to a man, and when he's saying, honey, let's have sex. And she says, well, we already did that. Don't you remember? It's an experience. There's certain things that experience, they increase oxytocin for women. Little things. It's not the big stuff. Big stuff usually creates a lot of testosterone with it. But it's the little things that really count big on Venus. And if men don't understand that, he thinks, well, why? I do all this big stuff. I work hard. We've got car insurance. We've got cars. We've got vacation. What's she to complain about? And in my mother's generation, there was nothing to complain about. My mother wasn't stressed out. She didn't need romance. But today, romance is the most powerful oxytocin producer there is. So what does it mean? To simplify it down to something to make a huge difference in your wife's life is every week, men. Every week. Otherwise, you're going to have an emergency crisis. Every week, you plan a date. That's it. This is romance. And there's little extras that come with it, but this is the big one. You plan a date 4 or 5 days in advance. So you're saying to your wife, and then you always have your for extra bonus, you have your vacation planned. And I'll do the vacation just for fun. You have this vacation out there, and I do it 9 months ahead of time. And I make sure my wife sees me give up my Saturday and Sunday in front of a computer to form the perfect vacation. I say, I'm planning our vacation, honey. Planning our vacation. Do you like this idea? You like that idea? Okay, I'm still working on it. And I plan the vacation. I show her. She now sends emails out to our children. She's got pictures to show her friends. For the next 9 months, she's looking forward to what? That vacation. A time when she doesn't have to care about everybody else. A time when her needs are being cared for. That's what stimulates oxytocin for women. That's the powerful one. When you're nurturing everybody out there, you get some oxytocin. But when you're able to balance nurturing others with nurturing yourself or getting nurturing for yourself, then your oxytocin levels shoot up big time. Now, if you weren't nurturing anybody and you were just nurturing yourself, you wouldn't have high oxytocin. You have to be giving to others and then give to yourself. The problem is some women who just give to themselves, they're never happy because they're not nurturing others. All of you women, the fact that you came to my talk or you're listening to what I say, you're the type of woman who's always over-giving to everybody else. Giving, 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 giving. And all you have to do is start balancing that, getting more for yourself, and your oxytocin levels shoot up. So here you've got, and of course you all know some women who all they do is think about themselves and you don't want to be like them. You know, my daughters will complain about this. They'll talk about their friend that calls and says, oh, I'm going through this whole process and talks for 20 minutes and then gets off the phone and never asks my daughters anything about their life. And they're all like fussy about this. And they go, she's not a real friend. All she cares about is using me to listen to her. And I go, if somebody called me up and just wanted to tell me about a bunch of stuff and didn't ask me any questions about me, I'd be happy. But to them, they see women, they have all these rules. If one person talks, the other person talks. If one person listens, the other person listens. Matter of fact, if a woman really wants to be heard, she says, oh, Carol, can't wait to talk to you. Tell me about your life. And your brain is asking lots of questions for 20 minutes. And now Carol has to ask her questions for 20 minutes. That's the Venusian rule. It's balance. It's always that balance thing. Well, today, women have to find this balance in a more powerful way, and romance is the answer. If you look historically, when women were more living in the garden and men were more in the jungle, romance is not even a factor. And as women have started living more in the jungle and being more self-sufficient, more financially independent, more stressed, romance becomes a more important factor. It's no coincidence that as women's freedoms and independence and equalities and opportunities have increased, that the importance of romance has increased to the point that we just take it for granted that you fall in love with someone romantically and that's who you pick. Just 50 years ago, your grandmother would have said, that's absurd. You don't fall in love. You don't marry somebody you fall in love with. That leaves you. That passes very quickly. You find somebody that's a good match and is practical for you and you'll get your needs met and so forth. But today, we don't do that. We want romance. And if we're going to be living, if women are going to be in the jungle, they need romance. And if a man's going to be coming home to a woman who lives in the jungle, she better be romanced or he won't be happy because she's not happy. So really, we're on the same team here. We got a project. How can we make women happy? Women are stressed. Men, we need your help. But women, you need to cooperate and help too. It can't be all up to him. It won't work. So how do you help create romance? Because men will forget, by the way. You already know that. As you're thinking, gee, I wish my husband was here. Or he remember this. We forget this stuff. Because it's not instinctive to us. What we do when it comes to dating, for example, is we wait till the last minute. And we think we're being so wonderful. Honey, what do you want to do tonight? I'll do whatever you want to do. What would you like to do? Anything. Tell me. I'll take you. As if that's romantic. It's not. That's what men have to understand. This, you think you're being generous, it's nothing. Women do not like that. And men can't understand that because I would love it if on Friday night my wife said, okay, honey, I'll do whatever you like. What do you want me to do? I'll do it. She never said that before. She did say it when I came back from this tour, though. That was very nice. She knew her husband had needs. Because we understand the whole need for men when it comes to sex. Testosterone. If a man doesn't have that experience once a week, his testosterone levels take a huge dive. This, unfortunately, that research is so new, it wasn't in this book, so I thought I'd give that to you tonight. The Japanese have discovered this, which is that if... I did this on a radio show today, and the guy said, how many men paid you to say that? I said, there were about, there's 40 million people have read my books. I'd say about 20 million men have paid me to say that. But it's real research. And this is the whole thing, is that everything about men is about keeping those testosterone levels up. And statistically, the American male, his testosterone levels drop around 32, 33 years old. They start declining. As he's getting older, they drop, continue to drop. And it's directly related to with his biological age, which means you could be 80 but feel like a 60-year-old. All has to do with just your testosterone levels. That's the key factor for men. Women, you have testosterone. It's certainly important to you, but not nearly as important as it is to men. For a man to create enough testosterone to cope with stress, we need to make 30 times more than a woman. Take a blood test of any woman and man in this room who's healthy. The men will have an average of 20 to 40 times more testosterone. And we lose it every day. We use it up, and we've got to rebuild it. And it's rest that helps rest and recreation that helps rebuild testosterone levels. For women, what it is oxytocin that rebuilds her stress, lowers her stress. Her body then begins to burn fat for energy. Women, you were born with 20 to 25% more fat cells than men. Why? Often women think it's a curse. No, it's only a curse if you can't burn the fat that's in those fat cells. That's your fuel. Your bodies are designed with extra fuel because your brains never stop. Because if you're going to make babies, you have to be on all the time. You have to have energy to do it all. As my mother said at one of my book signings when I wrote a book on parenting, Children Are From Heaven, she... they are when we know what we're doing, okay? One mother was saying, oh, I have so overwhelmed raising this child. Another woman said, oh, I've got two. She said, you got two. How do you do it? Another woman proudly walked up and said, I've got three. And they like bowed before her. And my mother was standing nearby and I said, well, my mom raised seven. Seven? Oh my God, how did you do it? And my mother really beautifully said, she said, whether you have one child or seven children, you give them everything you have. And that's the job of a mother. You give everything you have. And if you run out of energy, you're going to be overwhelmed and unhappy. You have to have that access to unlimited energy, which happens when your stress levels start to drop. So, romance will do it. All it takes, I've got a lot of examples in here for men, over 101 examples. But the most important one that you start with is start planning dates. Now, women, you can sabotage this. You know, for a woman's idea of romance is the man does everything. Women are always complaining, there's no romance. And I say, well, what do you do to create romance? And she says, well, I plan dates sometimes. And I say, well, are they romantic? She goes, no, I want him to do it. So the reality, what do you do to create romance? Here's what you do to create romance. This is a whole new thing in the world. What you do is you remind the man it's time to create romance 5 or 6 days early. You say simply, honey, would you schedule a date this weekend? Or you could say, honey, I'd like to go to this play. Would you get tickets and plan the date? That's it. Honey, there's three things I might like to do. You pick. Sometimes if you give him the pick, he'll take more credit, more testosterone. Happens for him. And you don't have to feel the pressure that if you're making a decision where you have to think about you and what he might like. You give him three choices. You pick. I'll be happy with any of them. And the attitude you have, which is romantic, is one that more important than where we go or what we eat or what we do, is that I get to spend time with you. And I don't have to worry about everybody else. But your attention's going to be on me and my attention's going to be on us. That's what romance is. Disconnected from all the things of work. You will turn off your cell phone, men. You won't do any work at that time. It's very important that you just have time with her. Men just do not understand the importance of this. What I'm telling you is this is a massive oxytocin producer. Now, if I wait till the last minute to say to my wife, honey, let's go to the movies tonight. She'll think for a moment and then she'll say, no, I still have to do this, 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 this. And then we don't go. And I guess she doesn't like to go out anymore. Can any women relate to the pressure that my wife feels if at the last minute you're asked to do something? Suddenly it's like it's another thing you have to do. Instead of something you're looking forward to, it's something you have to do. Now, for men, what you have to realize is have to's are good for us. I have to get up every morning and go to work. I have to get up at 3:30 and go to catch a plane and go do another thing. That actually increases more challenge, more sacrifice, more focus, and it lowers my stress level, makes me strong and vital if I keep challenging myself that way. Not extremely that way. I have my rest times. I have my recreation. Then I have my hard work times. This is the road for men. The road for women, they're already nurturing so many people. They have to take time to be nurtured, allow themselves to be nurtured, and to nurture themselves, doing the things they love to do, doing the things they don't have to do. So women, what you have to do is put on your have-to list, what I have to do are things I don't have to do. You have to create. If you want a happy family, you have to be happy. You have to start prioritizing yourself, one. Two, you have to start asking your partner for help to get that support. So you ask him for planning the date, then you go on the date, and you practice being romantic. Now, how do you practice being romantic on a date? You're happy. You're happy with whatever happens, and you appreciate whatever efforts he puts forth. Instead of it was a disaster, it was an adventure. We'll say that again. Not a disaster, it was an adventure. Something goes wrong and you're telling your friends, oh, we had quite an adventure. And he feels, yes, we did the adventure. And you focus on the good things he did instead of the bad things he did. But see, women don't understand that distinction. It's not that women are negative, it's that women's brains are different. And that when they're under stress, if they talk about stressful things, they feel better. So two women could be in a restaurant and the beans are bad. They'll spend the whole evening talking about how bad the beans are and why are there people in this restaurant? And why don't they change the menu? I know other restaurants have better beans than this. I can cook better beans than this. You know, my mother had a recipe. She would have never put this salt in the beans. Too much salt. You know, salt's not good for you. You can go, and they'll just go off. They'll take that as a little theme for the whole evening discussion. And they'll talk about it years later about how bad those beans were at that restaurant. And because women are women talking about that, they commiserate with the suffering of that meal and they feel good. It helps them cope with stress. So guy takes you to a restaurant. Oxytocin doesn't do anything for him but make him bored and sleepy. So you start talking about things that go wrong. What does that do for him? Literally causes his testosterone levels to start taking a dive. If you focus on what makes you happy, then he goes, yes, I did that. You know, if you're talking about, well, the chicken's really good. Well, I killed that chicken. I grew that chicken. I cooked that chicken. I barbecued that chicken. He feels like it's his restaurant. And this is what romance is for men, is to feel successful in making you happy. And it's not that you have to do it all. You just have to let them know it's time to start planning to make me happy. Time to plan the date. And in the beginning, halfway through the week, you say, oh, how's that date coming along? And he'll say, oh, it's coming along fine. Darn, I forgot all about it. And then he'll go and do it. Okay, so it takes a while for him to start understanding the power of this. So there's so many more things in there, but that's a good starting point. That's the romance part. And just that makes huge differences. Just as I'm so energized on my tour because, you know, I missed due to weather things. I missed a lot of interviews or whatever and so forth. And I'm thinking, I need to get more information. I need to let people know that my book's out there. If they know it's there, they'll buy it. And then just I got the news today that Associated Press is going to do an interview with me tomorrow. That means it's going to go into 50 or 100 newspapers. So suddenly I am on top of the world. What does it mean on top of the world if you're a man? Testosterone levels are up. Why? Because I know in the future one of my goals is going to be achieved. So then all the process getting to that future is stimulating testosterone. Now you can relate this to when a woman's thinking about a vacation, or a woman's thinking about getting her massage that week, or a woman's thinking about the date with her husband that week. Part of her whole being is organizing the whole week around creating that space where she'll be able to relax and be present. And a man has not even a clue of how powerful that is for her. And most women don't know how powerful it is because they've given up on it. It just won't happen. I should be happy. He thinks about me at the last minute. That doesn't work. So the next thing is communication. Communication is so easy to improve. The number one complaint women have often is he doesn't listen. Well, of course he doesn't listen. His brain is designed to respond to whatever you say in terms of solving the problem. As soon as you start talking about problems, he has to start sorting through everything you say. Is that important? Is that important? Is that important? What's most important? Well, if this is more important, then that's less important. So we'll forget that one. We'll forget that one. Now we're going to look at this one. Should I do something to this? He's sorting out the whole time. And so you don't feel heard. And you know what? You're not being heard because he's not consistently with you. He's consistently wanting to help you. But what he's doing is fixing the whole time in his head. And then when he says something, it's even worse because now you have evidence. I knew it. You weren't listening. You're just figuring out a response to me. You want to change me. You want to fix me. And he just wants you to be happy. Now, how do you make her happy, men? In a certain kind of conversation, you don't fix things. But this is not an easy habit to break all by himself. He needs her help, and she needs his help. So how it works is, once again, just asking for what you want, women. 3 times a week, for 10 minutes, you put a beginning and end on it. You just have what I call a Venus talk. Say, let's have a Venus talk. Let me remind you, you don't have to. It's only going to last 10 minutes. You won't have to say anything at the end. That's the most important thing, because men are already dreading the conversation. Oh my gosh, whatever I say, it's going to be wrong. I've been through this one before. So you just say, you won't have to say anything. I talk for 10 minutes. You don't have to say anything. I don't want you to say anything. Just while you listen. And I'm going to feel so much better. You don't have to fix anything. And you don't have to change in any way. So there's no hidden messages here about you should change. And you don't have to feel bad. You don't have to apologize. None of that. Just look in my direction. That's all I need. And if there's a long pause, say, tell me more. That's it. Any man can do that. Performance free. There's no way you can go wrong with this technique. And then you do it for 10 minutes. At the end of 10 minutes, you say, oh, I'm so happy that I had this conversation with you. And then leave the room. Or you say, thanks so much for listening. It really helps. I feel a little better now. And walk out of the room. And he stands there thinking, all right, I didn't say anything, didn't do anything. It didn't turn into a disaster. She was feeling kind of down. She feels better. She gives me credit. I like this job. I can do this job. This is an easy job to do. It just has to have a limited amount of time and very clear messages that this is not a problem-solving conversation. Does that mean you can never have problem-solving conversations with your husband? Of course you can, but not when you want to talk about your feelings. You try to keep those separate. What women want to do, they have a conference call and they're talking about solving a problem, they're going to bring in all their feelings as well. And they're going to bring in everything else that hasn't been talked about for a while. If you're regularly getting your feelings out and you're being heard, you will produce the maximum oxytocin. If you're problem solving and you're feeling, you will produce much less oxytocin. This is how women talk. When women talk, they share feelings and they solve problems together. It's a little bit of oxytocin, but if you're doing it all day long, you're going to get plenty of oxytocin. This has never been done before on this planet, where you just simply talk to somebody for 10 minutes and they're not expected to say anything in response. The reason I came across this is sort of where therapy was moving and sometimes moves and works. I saw this guy, one of the most successful therapists in the world. Men from Mars is the biggest selling relationship book in the world. I've probably literally counseled tens of thousands of couples because it's usually short therapy because they get it real quick. I've had a waiting list of unlimited number of people always with my counseling practice. And I remember when it began. I used to have a half full practice and I started practicing one technique. When it's a woman, don't try to fix anything. Just ask questions and say, tell me more. Now, I thought in the beginning that they wouldn't pay me. Well, they just kept coming back more and more, and they told all their friends. And within a month or two, I had a full practice and a waiting list. And what was I doing? Nothing. This blew my mind. I mean, literally, I was embarrassed that I wasn't like giving them good advice or whatever. And eventually, you know, I would start teaching about differences between men and women, but I'd send them to my seminars for that. And I say, in therapy, I'm just going to help you feel good. And I learned they can come in with all these problems, and if I was a good listener, they would feel better at the end as if all those problems weren't there. And the problems were there, it's just they had so much more positive brain chemicals to remind them of all the good instead of just looking at the problems. So it looked like this. I asked the women that were coming, and I said, this is actually a little bit longer than I planned to talk. If you're enjoying my talk so far, let me know with your clapping. Okay. If I'm arousing your interest in buying my new book, would you please raise your hand? Okay. They say if I talk too long, I lose books. So I want to make these really three good points. And thank you for that. So with the listening thing, what was that last point I was just making before I asked for that hand going up? Oh, we're on the listening thing. Okay, you're listening good. I'm listening good. Oh, I was giving you a thing. Once my clientele started to increase, I asked the women, I said, so why did you pick me as your therapist? And they said, oh, my friend told me that you really cared. That was it. They didn't say, oh, you listen and you don't solve problems. They just said, they told me you really cared. Now, I really cared. I really do care. But I had always cared, even when I had an empty practice. The way I demonstrated my caring was by solving problems, thinking that's what women would want. If a man comes into a therapist and talks, and you don't help him solve that problem, he's going to feel he wasted his money. Big time, right away. Within 10 minutes, I have to say something impressive to a man, and he goes, why am I here? Whereas for women, particularly in the first several sessions, women don't expect a solution. They want to give you all the details, and that's when women will always get the biggest results in therapy. That's when I was starting to notice. Women get the biggest results in therapy towards the beginning. That's before they start trying to solve the problem. And what it is, if a woman feels, I'm just going to talk about the problem and not solve the problem, then testosterone doesn't get produced. Whenever you're solving problems, testosterone's being produced. Whenever you're talking about problems and somebody's listening, oxytocin is produced. So how about 3 times a week, just talking about the problems without looking at him thinking, and I want you to fix this, and I want you to change this. Because even when women say, I don't want you to fix this, because men will interrupt with solutions, they say, I don't want you to fix it, I want you just to listen. And then underneath this, because if you listen, you might change. There is this little shove trying to get them to move. And that's your testosterone side, to whatever extent it's there, to different degrees. When you release a man from having to change in order to make you happy, then men suddenly have all this energy to save the day. That's all they need, is that message of acceptance, and they have more energy after they've taken their nap. Remember that part. Okay, so that's the Venus talks. And then the third is the emergency man. I kind of started out talking about emergency man, which is learning to ask men to do little things for you. But I suggest in the beginning stages, just focus on the romance and good communication. Because as I began to really discover, when I listened without trying to solve my wife's problems, that she really does have a lot of stress in her life. Massive. But when I listened to solve problems, I was constantly minimizing. Well, you don't really have to do that. Well, you don't really have to do that. But when I stopped trying to solve problems, because she said, I don't want you to solve it, then I just got to experience her experience of life, which is very different from a man's. She takes on a lot more responsibility, and God bless her for it. As far as I'm concerned, she walks on water. She's an incredible being, and I see this being in sight of all women. They are here to bring love into this planet. And if we men can help them lower their stress, that love will flow towards us as well. And I believe it's women who give meaning to men. They give meaning to our lives. They civilize this world. And if they don't get the support from men, they can't do that. And they become chaotic and stressed and overwhelmed, and men lose all their energy. So we've got this world that we're sort of living in right now, which is massive stress, and the one that we can shift into, which is taking us to a higher level of progress, a greater level of connection between men and women that have ever been experienced before in this world. So with this understanding of why today Mars and Venus collide, we then have a basis for the subtitle of this book, which is how to improve our relationships through understanding better how men and women cope differently with stress. Thank you all so much for coming tonight. It's been a real pleasure for me to be with you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for Eli Gottlieb, Russell Banks, and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on February 5th, 2008.